flavour.
This is Cambridge Radio.
I'm going to read you the menu. It's fantastic.
So we get better flavour because of the fen soil.
I've drunk more beer since I came here and bought my two barrels than I've ever done in my life before, I think.
I shouldn't have said almonds. They don't make it from almonds.
So you've got this big sticky mess when you start off.
Pizza pots, pies.
My wife's cakes are selling up hotcakes. Brilliant, thank you.
The time is right for this sort of thing.
Food is everything.
Cambridge is right for this sort of thing.
What's it like? Delicious.
Good afternoon. I'm Matt Bentman here in our Guider Street studios on a lovely sunny day, here with Alan Alder and Sue Bailey. And over the next hour, we're going to be bringing you news and stories about local food and drink.
Yes, we go to Daily Bread in King's Hedges to find out about their money-raising appeal.
And I catch up with Bill Brogan and Market House, who talks to me about their summer menu.
And on the subject of summer menus, Alex Rushmer of Vanderlyle has advice on building a salad.
And we have all our usual features too, including news and jobs.
And in the second half of the programme, we have an appreciation of Dave Fox. We received the bad news this week that Dave had died. He contributed a lot to this programme over many years, giving advice from his plot at Trumpington Allotments.
Yes, he certainly did. So, we begin, though, with a trip to Daily Bread. The cooperative off King's Hedges Road is trying to raise £20,000. Alan went along to find out why and spoke to Henrik Burton.
Well, the main reason we're trying to raise that money is to keep the store open for the community and keep it flourishing, basically. At the moment, we're having, I would call it, somewhat of a crisis. We're in a situation where, although we've still got plenty of regular customers, our costs all around the board are going up. We're looking to address that. The first way we're looking to address that primarily is trying to make the store, Daily Bread Cambridge, better known. For those who've visited here, you might know from outside, the shop doesn't look particularly much like a regular shop. We don't have a large storefront. We're based in what is effectively a warehouse.
And people driving past on the main road probably wouldn't spot you anyway.
Absolutely. Yes, we're working on, firstly, getting a cafe and stall set up outside, because we've got a lovely green area out the front of the shop. But currently, we set out chairs sometimes for people to drink coffee if they want it. But we're looking to make that a more visible, more like inviting space to get people to pay attention as they come past. We're looking to do some marketing across town as well, just again to spread the knowledge that we're here, we sell all these things, these whole foods that people are looking for, ethically sourced. And in addition, we're looking to, third thing, just expand our range of stock. And how much we're able to supply at any given time. At the moment, some of our most popular sellers will often sell out each week, and at the place we're at, we can't reliably stock such a large amount that we can always cover the entire demand for that.
Right. So you're existing a bit hand-to-mouth at the moment.
At the moment, yes.
Yeah. What does sell best?
I would say our number one best sellers are our mueslis. We have a range of mueslis, organic and non-organic, mixed by the staff in store. And they sell in 500 gram bags and 1 kilogram bags and even in 5 kilogram bags for people who want to buy a lot of muesli at once.
Yeah, you do sell quite a lot of things in small amounts, but also in bulk as well. Is the bulk purchasing quite a popular feature?
Definitely, because when you buy these sorts of things in bulk, you can get a better price on them than you would be getting them in smaller quantities. And quite a lot of these are staples, right? They're oats, they're barley, they're rice, things that keep a long time. And if you've got room in your house, you can buy a large amount and always have it available for whenever you're cooking.
And what else sells well? I know you sell a lot of tinned goods as well. Are they good sellers?
Yes, tinned goods are popular. Actually, what's very popular at the moment are we've got a range of chocolates and honeys.
Oh, right. Shall we go and look at them? Yes. And you can tell me? But before we do, we'll just buy some shelves with grains on. What sort of grains have you got?
Well, we try and stock as many grains as possible. We've got millet, rice, wheat. We've also recently come into stock some amaranth, which is an ancient grain. I haven't tried it myself, but a lot of people have been asking for it.
What do you do with it? Eat it.
Yes, as far as I'm aware. It's good for gut health.
Okay, let's go and look at the chocolates and the honeys. I'm going past lots of apple juices, fruit juices.
Yep, apple juices. These are all from Watergirl Orchards, which is a local orchard in Cambridgeshire. Quite a good price as well. I think it's just over £3 for a 750ml bottle of apple juice.
And past quite a lot of different flowers as well.
Yep, wide range of flowers. If you're looking for a specialty flower for any sort of baking, we do also offer special orders where if you're looking for something very specific and our suppliers can provide it, we'll order it in for you. We get a mixture of chocolates from some local suppliers and some more overseas, but they're all using fair trade chocolate. As an ethical Whole Foods retailer, we are trying to make everything we sell. Everything in this shop is vegetarian. The majority of it is vegan. And where possible, we're stocking fair trade products. We're stocking organic products. We're stocking locally sourced.
I've just turned away from the chocolates and looking at the honeys. There's a lot of honeys here.
Yes, multiple, again, from local sources. Samford's honey is located in Cambridgeshire.
I can see that you do fresh fruit and vegetables and bread as well.
We get those in multiple times a week. The bread is from several bakeries around Cambridge.
And the fruit and vegetables?
A lot of our fruit and vegetables come from Cambridge Organic, also known as COFCO.
And in the chillers?
In the chillers, kombucha is very popular. Again, we've got tofu, not just plain tofu, but also various flavoured tofus.
And over here, you've got a lot of refill.
Yes, that's
things.
One of our, again, based on our ethical principles, one of our big initiatives to reduce waste is refills. So a lot of, it's not just food, it's also home cleaning products.
And you have soaps and so on?
Yeah, a lot of soaps. Again, some of these are from a small local business who are actually located in Arbury, handmade, very lovely soaps.
And toothpaste as well. So really, you sell a lot of what a supermarket would sell, but
absolutely.
What you're doing is concentrating, where possible, on local suppliers.
Local suppliers.
Ethical suppliers.
It's, again, a core principle.
You are an ethical supermarket.
That's the best way of putting it, I would say. Yes.
Yeah. Could you tell me a bit more about the situation? I mean, you've been here for a long time. So
30 years.
Why are things difficult now? Yes. Just because of sudden increases in prices?
Increasing costs. And the other thing is just a decrease in the number of people physically coming through the doors these days. Really, what happened was during the pandemic a few years ago, a lot of customers no longer really became willing to travel large distances, but the footfall still just hasn't recovered to the level it was. We're working on two things. Firstly, we're trying to get more people through the door to, again, restore those levels. Secondly, we're also working on a delivery program. So anywhere within 10 kilometers of the store, we offer home delivery to, where we have two cargo bikes, and you can place your order with us online or over the phone, and we will cycle it out to you. I personally will cycle it out to you, quite likely, because that's me doing that at the moment. But at the same time, absolutely, we would very much appreciate it if more people knew about it and more people were willing to try it out.
And how confident are you you'll reach your
£20,000.
I'll admit I'm not entirely confident, but we're hoping that even if we just get part of the way there, we're still going to try and make this succeed. I don't want this place to be in trouble, and I know a lot of people around here who have come here for years, decades even, also feel the same.
So how do people contribute?
If you just go to the website for it, GoFundMe Daily Bread Cambridge, and that should lead you to the right place, hopefully, and that will take you to the page to make a donation if you want. That being said, if people don't have the money to donate or would rather not donate, honestly, any bit of publicity is also just hugely helpful. Like even just telling people you know who you think might be interested in this sort of Whole Foods supermarket and ethical principles. If you know anyone like that, tell them, and even a few customers a day in addition to what we've got now would make a massive difference.
Yeah, word of mouth is a good process, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, but money's handy too.
Yes, I must admit.
Great, Henrik. Thank you very much for your time.
No worries.
Thank you.
Well, it's a good place to shop, Daily Bread, and it would be an enormous shame if it had to close. I shop there for things like their muesli, which is very good, and there's lots of tinned foods, such as tomatoes, black beans, a whole variety of beans, in fact, nuts, dried fruit, and refill cleaning products. But I didn't realise that a lot of their fresh fruit and vegetables come from Cambridge Organic, so I'll start getting some of that too.
Well, it's a fascinating place, and I keep meaning to go there very naughtily. I keep thinking about it, and then I don't get around to it. But it's not far from the studio, is it? I ought to be making my tracks
it's
there.
It's easy to get to, and there's a lot of parking.
Is there a lot of parking. Oh, excellent. And I love the variety.
Yeah, it's
fantastic.
A good place. Good place. And now details of free food available in and around Cambridge. And the information about what's available and where to get it comes from the Olio app. And that's there so that people's or businesses' surplus food doesn't go to waste.
That's right. And today's look at Olio for Cambridge shows us that Coco on Beaumont Road near Queen Edith Way has collected lots of bakery goods from Waitrose, including loaves, bloomers, rolls, ciabattas and pitters. So a good haul of items there. Next up is Eva on Campkin Road, who has a chicken and bacon wrap, a mature cheddar and onion focaccia, and bags of mixed and red chillies available. Tom, next to the central train station, has packets of Sainsbury's items for anybody who wants them, including 8 punnets of cocktail beetroot, a dozen crispy buns, 4 giraffe buns, and a potato salad. Now, I had to look up what a giraffe bun is because...
I'm glad you did, Matt.
Well, apparently it's just like a tiger bun, but with more pronounced mottling, so like a larger, more giraffe-style pattern, possibly because it expanded more during baking due to more gluten being present. Giraffe bread is also known as Marco Polo bread. So, you learn something new every day.
And I'm very glad we do. Yeah, but what's interesting there is that I think it's the first time that we've heard of Waitrose products being available from Olio. So
I think all of the major supermarkets are on board now.
Oh, right, OK. And there is also an app called Too Good To Go, and that has unsold food from restaurants, cafes and shops, and they're often at less than half price. And basically the idea is that instead of specifying each unsold item, what's left at the end of the day is just put into a magic bag ready to take home. Otherwise it would be binned. There's lots of companies that use it. Greggs, Novi, Namaste, Pret, Upper Crust, Marks and Spencer, Spar, the Co-op. Local ones like Barrington Village Stores have used it, Budgeons and Arbury, the Clayton Hotel, loads of them. Mm. And that's the Too Good To Go app.
OK, on to our first news break now for Saturday the 14th of June.
Yeah, there's a plant swap at the Trading Hut in Trumpington Allotments on the 15th of June. That's tomorrow if you're listening to us live, from 10:30 till 12 noon. Everyone is welcome, and a small donation will suffice if you've nothing to swap.
Co-Farm, which is next to Coldham's Common off Barnwell Road, has sessions available for you to harvest and buy produce, including broad beans, and you can book on their website.
The asparagus season is drawing to an end. It traditionally finishes on Midsummer's Day. You can get it freshly picked from Brownsfield Farm's stall on Cambridge Sunday Market, and they also have a stall at St Ives and Ely Farmers Market too.
Yeah, some market dates coming up. Heston's Farmers Market is on the 21st of June from 9:30 till 12:30. The Grandston's Farmers Market is on the 29th of June from 9 till 1. And on the 5th of July is the Linton Farmers Market from 9 till 12 noon. And one stall which will be at all of those is Sweet Pea Market Garden. And that can also be found on Fridays between noon and 2 p.m. by Cambridge Station near the ubiquitous Gales.
And the Three Horseshoes at Maddingley now has steak Sundays, with roast until 5:30 and then a selection of steaks, sides and sauces alongside its usual a la carte evening menu.
There's a Community Nature Day, a free family-friendly event at Trumpington Pavilion on the 21st of June from 10 till 5. The events include discovering wildlife on the wreck, moth trapping, making bee hotels, quizzes, chats with experts, and at 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. a half-hour talk on enriching the wildlife in your garden.
Local chef Rosie Sykes has a summer supper club at the Canteen in Southwold on the 27th of June at 6:30. The cost for that is £49, and you can book at info@oldhospitalcanteen.co.uk.
Briar Farm, which we featured on our programme on the 3rd of May, has a work party on the 29th of June from 8 till 12. You can contact them via social media for more information.
And Hidden by Pudini in Willingham has been getting fresh produce from the remarkable Briar Farm, and the next Hidden by Pudini Supper Club is on the 4th of July. So that's all for now. We'll have more news later.
Well, summer brings new menus, and I went along to Market House in Cambridge's Market Square to find out about theirs, and I spoke to manager Bill Brogan.
We've got the new menu starting today. We've been doing all the prep all the weekend. It's a summer menu, as well as the a la carte menu. We've got a new set lunch menu started and a new set menu for groups as well. But it's geared towards summer. We've got torch mackerel as one of the dishes, with compressed cucumber, squid ink, tapioca crisp and charred sweet corn. We've got braised Norfolk lamb breast, that's also on as a starter, with salsa verde radish and frise salad. We've still got the scallops on, pan-fried scallops with cauliflower and three ways. And we've got a pea, broad bean and courgette arancino with herb mayonnaise and olive oil. And for the mains, we've got Suffolk pork tenderloin, slow roast pork belly, confit of carrot and brown butter, puree and a red wine jus, a grilled octopus we've actually put on this time. First time we've actually had octopus on the menu, but the staff really enjoyed it when they did the tasting and the pictures. And we've got pan-fried whole place, which is beautiful fresh whole place with sea vegetables and steamed cockles. We've still got the Hereford steak on, but also because of these times, and that's a premium steak, we've also got the rump steak on, which also gives a cheaper option. We've also got the vegan dishes and the vegetarian dishes and the sides. And today we've just been trying out the new desserts, which are absolutely beautiful. Mango parfait with meringue. And then we've got a warm polenta cake, which is absolutely beautiful. And it's a deconstructed polenta cake, so served warm. So that was absolutely delicious. And today we've started the menu, but actually we've been pretty busy. We're full to the gunnels tonight, which is quite extraordinary, but very pleasing as well. And even at lunchtime, it was pretty busy. So we've got a very busy week. So the team have done very well. That's the front of house team, and also the back of house team. And one of the things we've actually done is incorporate the Asia menu within the English menu, within the British menu. So you can have that downstairs or upstairs. You don't have to go in separate restaurants. And we think that's going to be streamline the operation quite a lot. We've sorted out all the kitchens all over Sunday and Monday. All the staff are in, moving stuff around. To streamline the operation.
So, yeah. So people can eat downstairs in the wine bar now, the same as in the restaurant?
They can, that's right, And like tonight, it's full, the wine bar is full, and upstairs is full, so
That is very nice for a Tuesday, isn't it? That's excellent.
It is, yeah. It's, It's very good. I mean, Tuesdays are quite busy for us. And I think that's because a few other restaurants are closed, but it's a very busy day. But today has been very busy. And like I said, we were very busy at lunchtime today as well. So the team have done very well getting ready and serving the customers and everything else. So it's good. The team have really rallied round.
Because it's quite stressful launching a new menu. You don't really have a sort of soft entry point, do you, for something like that?
No. A couple of the chefs were doing a lot of the preparation, led by Jono on Sunday. And then yesterday there was a lot of preparation going on with Chris, the head chef, doing a lot of the work. And then they came in again this morning just to finish it all off, so we're all ready. But anyway, we've actually put it off. It's quite a lot of prep, but we are streamlining overall. So once we get into the swing of it, it will be... it's definitely seasonal, which is what we're about anyway, and sustainable, but also probably less complex.
So all in all, you're very happy with the way things are going at Market House?
Yes, it's been pretty good. I mean, it's not without its challenges, like everywhere, but at the end of the day, it's going pretty well, and we're still here feeding the people of Cambridge, which we're very happy about.
Yeah, that was Bill Brogan from Market House. And another great aspect of summer eating is salads, or at least it should be. But what makes a good salad? I went along to ask Alex Rushmer of Van der Lyle in Mill Road for some tips. Some of the ones there are spectacular, with up to 40 ingredients. So I asked Alex about the basic principles he uses to create a salad.
Essentially what we do is we build up layers of flavour. And I think salad is one of those things that needs to have contrast, and it needs to be consistently interesting. And I think what makes a good salad is one that tastes slightly different every time you have a forkful of it. And usually we have two dressings on it, and then usually we start with those, actually. We start with one of them and then we finish with another one. So we have a saffron mayonnaise base that we use as a sort of adhesive to attach all the leaves and different things to the dish. But essentially my building block, my philosophy when it comes to salad, is that it has to be about contrast. And that means contrasts of temperature and texture and sweetness and acidity and richness. So that's what we're trying to do. And that's possibly why there are so many ingredients in there. So as well as the leaves, there are things that provide texture. So there's some raw vegetables. So we have raw turnips and radishes in there.
What, sliced up or grated?
Yeah, sliced very thinly, and we do little matchsticks of turnip, which are salted, which just softens them ever so slightly, and then rinsed. That brings seasoning to the salad as well. Further texture we have in the form of hazelnuts through the dressing, so it's a toasted hazelnut vinaigrette dressing. And then for acidity and more seasoning, we have some fermented items. Pickles, I think, are really important. So acidity is crucial when you're making a salad. So we have pickled beetroot. But those are the important things to keep in mind when you're making a salad. So have those contrasts. So it needs to be well seasoned. So you need to add salt. But you have to remember that salt will pull moisture out of the leaves as well. So it will wilt the leaves. It will essentially make them less crispy and less crunchy and less fresh tasting. So when you're seasoning your salad, wait until the last possible moment. And then dressings are actually really easy. People think dressings are hard, and they're trying to make sort of emulsified vinaigrettes, and you need fat and acid, essentially, and that can come from absolutely anywhere. So traditionally it would be olive oil and maybe white wine vinegar, but if you think about the number of things that bring fat and richness, it could be different oils, obviously, but mm-hmm. You could also use brown butter if you wanted to be really sort of really adventurous with it, cheese or hummus, things like that you can stir through. Feta is amazing in salad, so lots and lots of things can bring fat. And then acidity, as I said, vinegar would be traditional. There's loads of different types of vinegars, and the simplest salad dressing, really good olive oil, really good vinegar. Sometimes that's all you need. Pinch of salt, sometimes a pinch of sugar as well, just to help balance out that acidity and make the whole thing taste more interesting and a bit more extensive. I love playing around with it. So you have these, you're building up these layers of flavour.
And what sort of ratio, Alex, between the fat and the
acid? So traditionally, it's really easy to remember. You have two parts fat and one part acid. So as a broad ratio, that works really, really well. Always taste it. Taste it as you're going along. Yeah. And taste the dressing on itself. Dip a leaf into the dressing and see how it tastes.
And that was Alex Rushmer on salads. So are you much of a salad maker, Sue?
Well, I love making salads in the summer. And yes, some of his ideas were really quite interesting. But I mean, I do like a sort of good basic vinaigrette, but it has to be, as he says, good quality oil. But you can use flavoured oils, like, say, a walnut oil or something. And I like using balsamic vinegar because I like the flavour of it, and I don't care the fat, it turns it slightly pink. But also, one thing I do remember having in France once was the most incredible dressing, and it had a load of mustard in it.
Yes,
and
yes.
And that really gives a total zing to a salad dressing, I'd say.
Yes.
And then, of course, lovely fresh salad leaves. Nothing
absolutely
better.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I made a salad this week. The dressing, I put some pomegranate molasses in.
Oh, actually. I have that and I love it. Oh,
which
yes.
is good. But if you put too much in, it does rather
dominate. It can rather overkill. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, but a bit of experimentation.
Oh,
not
yeah.
bad, eh?
Yeah. Perfect.
Right. We were going to have a newspaper review at this point, but in fact, there's been some sort of distribution hiatus, and when I went to get one, there weren't any. But Sue was supposed to be on the BBC Radio 4's Today programme this morning, so I'm going to ask her about that instead. What were you going to talk about, Sue, and why didn't you?
Well, I was going to talk about crisp butties. But that very well...
Your expertise knows no bounds.
Oh, I know. No, sort of food historian, food scientist. Yeah, crisp butty expert. Well, no, but obviously there have been rather more important things in the news happening than crisp butties. And there was going to be... Well, possibly still is happening in the Midlands, this sort of massive crisp butty making challenge that a chef up there was doing. So I was being brought in
to talk
about.
So it was topical, was it?
Exactly. So
right,
I was being
so you won't
in.
Be on next week talking about
I sadly
it.
Will not.
Oh, what a shame.
I know, but I mugged, I found out an awful lot of information about crisp
well,
butties.
Give us a couple of really interesting snippets about crisp butties. And remember, you heard it first here on Flo.
Well, in fact, crisp butties date back to the 1930s because that's when Smith's crisps first came onto the scene, and the little blue twist of salt was part of the what was part of this thing there. And then, in fact, the type of bread that you meant to use for a crisp butty is very important. So again, in the 1930s was when the sort of first factory type bread was being produced, and the sort of white sliced loaves, and then that really took off in the 60s. So that sort of nice, not quite wodginess, but, you know, the balance of a soft white slice
yes.
with the crunchiness of a decent crisp.
Yes, I used to like crisp butties,
yes.
actually.
Yes.
I thought you were going to be talking about chip butties, which is another thing entirely. But is there a... I mean, you've mentioned the Smith's crisps when they were sort of ready salted.
Mm.
What about flavoured crisps?
Well, that's not quite the done thing
isn't,
for
isn't
an authentic crisp butty.
Faux pas.
No. But, I mean, my absolute favourite is a decent, you know, ready salted crisp.
When you say it's your absolute favourite, did you eat this sort of thing regularly then?
No, I don't eat them very regularly because I'm trying to watch my weight. But no, give me a salt and vinegar crisp and I'm afraid I'll throw it back at you because
I
cannot. Not stand the flavour.
I don't like salt and vinegar crisps.
No, cheese and onion.
Matt's probably a good crisp.
Well, I was just thinking, in defence of crisps, they're all baked these days as opposed to
yes,
cooked,
yes.
so they should be a lot healthier.
Exactly so. So oven baked rather than oily, greasy things. And of course, truffle flavoured crisps. I mean,
truffle flavoured crisps.
Oh, yes.
God, things are so posh these days. How much do truffle flavoured crisps cost?
I think they're quite expensive.
We'll have to do a truffle flavoured crisp. Test
I
flavor
think we should,
tasting
yes.
test.
And talking about Smith's crisps, you've reminded me how crisps only used to have like a shelf life of a few days when they were in the packet, weren't they? And it wasn't until I think about the mid 80s where they changed the gas that was pumped into the packets in order to preserve them for longer. Most people these days, they're completely unaware that, you know, crisps can just last for ages and ages,
oh, yeah.
but they used to just last a few days.
That's very true. And of course, with the fat, the high fat content they used to have, there was a much greater risk of rancidity of them going off and tasting really bad and really manky. So, yes, we're lucky now.
Good word, rancidity. Like that. Anyway, we are going to be back after the break. I was just thinking too much of crisps. With more news and an appreciation of Dave Fox, who died a week ago.
Cambridge Radio.
On Women Making Waves, we meet CEO of Her Ethical AI, Tamara Paliner, who talks about how she came to the world of machine learning and AI in policing, and talks of her interest in devising systems which detect victim blaming.
And Jules Waters, a health coach with a rich background in science. Jules now dedicates her expertise to empowering busy women to be as healthy as they can by making nano changes. That's Women Making Waves online at cambridge.radio and Sunday at 12 on Cambridge Radio.
This August, come to Quai Country Park, where the Ancient Oak Fair will transport you back to the Middle Ages. You'll see the horsemen of the Knight Equestrian Stunt Display Team perform stunts, tricks and jousting, the power and elegance of the Watermill Wolves, and the ancient falconry methods of the Falconry School. This and much more at the Ancient Oak Fair, Saturday 30th and Sunday 31st of August at Quai Country Park, Stoke-on-Quai. Tickets available at ancientoak.uk.
Welcome back to Flavour, beginning with our final news roundup. On the 3rd of July, Chef Danny, who we featured recently, has a pasta-making workshop at Café Au Chocolat in Green Street, where there will be a demo and a tasting of sauce-making. It costs £45, and that includes a luxury goodie bag. You can book via the Danny Cook's Instagram or Facebook accounts.
Thrive in Norfolk Street has a vegan and gluten-free summer afternoon tea from Chef Danielle Mepetui. It's £39 and Danielle will be providing a demo making some of the desserts. You can secure your spot with a £10 deposit at thrivecambridge.com/events. Places, however, are limited and the date for it is the 6th of July. It begins at 3 p.m.
And in Congratulations Corner today is the team behind the film 6 Inches of Soil, which has been nominated in the Best Foreign Documentary category of the Golden Trailer Awards in Los Angeles. Now, that is some achievement. It features Adi from Sweet Pea Market Garden in Caxton.
On to wine news now, and the Wine Rooms in Hills Road has a pretty good tasting coming up. A tasting of wines from the highly regarded Paul Jebelet Annay, and that's hosted by a member of the winemaker's team. It's on the 18th of June. It's an exploration of the Northern Rhone. The cost is £40. That includes 6 wines, bar snacks and the guided tasting.
Cambridge's Gutted and Stars wine and now available at Fortnum & Mason in London's Piccadilly. And that's a great triumph for vintner Chris Wilson. 3 are available. Welcome to Paradise, a 2024 Bacchus. Drink the Sunshine, a 2024 Sauvignon Blanc. And Stars 69 Long Player, a Chardonnay from 2022.
And Gutter and Stars has a tasting event with small plates at Novi in Regent Street. That's on the 19th of June from 7 till 9 p.m. and you can book for that now.
Amelie at Ben's Yard near Ely has a Discover Rhone afternoon on the 21st of June from 2.30 to 5. There will be 6 wines to try with a guided tasting by Charles of Nethergate Wines and a seasonal 4-course menu. The cost is £42.50.
A little earlier than usual, we move on to our job section.
Cambridge Wine has vacancies. You'll need a good knowledge of wine. Various hours are available, so send a CV and a short covering letter to Clive Pawsey at cambridgewine.com. And Pawsey is spelt P-A-W-S-E-Y.
And Curb Collective needs an experienced barista to join them from mid to late July. This is likely to be a 4-day-a-week job with about 36 hours. But some flexibility may be possible, but weekend availability is definitely a must.
Our final feature today is an appreciation of Dave Fox, a great favourite here on Flavour. Dave died last Saturday, the 7th of June, at the age of 60. He had been fighting cancer for many years. Dave was a remarkable person. He graduated from Cambridge University with a degree in mathematics and went on to be a software developer. He did much else besides, such as interviews with Flavour from his allotment in Trumpington, and they were very popular. Chef Tristan Welsh used to enjoy listening to them when he lived in the Caribbean. That was before he returned to Cambridge. Dave did more than 50 features for Flavour, and all of them were full of good advice, enthusiasm and good humour.
Dave's first appearance was in 2007, in the very first edition of Flavour, and back then we were known as Flavour of the Month. So here's an extract with Dave talking to our programme's founder, Elaine Cusack.
What's going on here is that over here we've got pumpkins and squashes that are interplanted with sweet corn. So the idea is the sweet corn grows up and makes lovely corn on the cob in August and September. And the pumpkins grow more horizontally and they'll help to cover the ground and conserve moisture there. So that's an example of interplanting. Hopefully it's going to work. You can also see here strawberries that are interplanted with lettuce, so they go quite well together. This is an experiment where I've got radishes planted with courgettes, and the radishes will come out very soon, but the courgettes will crop through July and August. And then beyond that, we've got a nice flower patch with these lovely night-scented stock, which have a fantastic scent from dusk onwards. They're pollinated by moths, which is why they give off the scent at night. And then there's a quite a promising row of nice large sunflowers that are just about to burst into flower.
Dave's sense of fun and his joy in experimenting carried on undiminished, as this recording 17 years later on the 6th of April 2024 shows.
What's going on?
Getting ready for Christmas, Alan.
What are you doing?
I'm preparing to sow parsnips. And
right, and you've got this metal thing.
Well, this is one for the extreme vegetable growers, really, but often my parsnips are not beautiful, long, smooth cone shapes like you find in the shops. They're knobbly, they fork, sometimes they go down 5 centimetres and then send off multiple forks. Yeah. So they're not that easy to prepare in the kitchen. You don't want to be dealing with that on Christmas Eve. So my wife makes wonderful Christmas lunches, and my contribution is to grow the veg, so I'm going to try and do it properly. My soil is light and sandy, so ideal for parsnips, you'd think, but there's a lot of gravel in it, a lot of stones, and I think that's what's causing the misshapen roots. In fact, I know that's the case.
Right, so what's the solution?
Well, a solution is to make a deep conical hole in the soil, pushing all the stones out to the side. And I do this by bashing a metal post. It's one of those spikes you use to support a fence post.
Yeah.
I bash that into the ground and wiggle it about a little bit, lift it out, removing the stones from around the hole.
Right, so you've got quite a nice deep hole.
Yeah, it's quite deep, yeah, absolutely. So, I'm now using a metal rod to widen the hole a little bit.
Right, so you're stirring around.
I'm shaping the hole, but I'm trying to make sure there's no stones going to get in the way of this parsnip. So there you go. So we're a good 40 centimetres down there.
Gosh.
And then we fill the hole with this mixture, which is sieved compost, sand, and a bit of topsoil. Without the stones.
Are proportions particularly important?
Probably, but I haven't edited it very precisely. The important thing is no stones and no great need for nutrients. They're not heavy feeders. You know, they grow slowly over a long time.
Yeah.
And there's a little bit of...
So you're just mixing it about in the...
I'm just mixing it, yeah. And now we'll trowel that into the hole. I probably won't have the energy to do all my parsnips in this way. This is extreme veg growing.
Right.
But I'm aiming to... I've got 14 holes prepared so far.
Great fun. On Tuesday, I talked to some members of Trumpington Allotments, along with Ian Webb from the local Wildlife Trust, who had known Dave for many years. His wife, Ali, sat in for a little while, and we talked about him. And after my voice, you hear Ian, Susan Colasso, Pat Edwards and Dave Jackson. One of Dave's strong characteristics was a great concern for the environment. And Ian, he had some connection with the Wildlife Trust.
Yes, he did. I've known him for over 20 years, and he's always had that passion for wildlife. And I think it was an initial understanding that wildlife was important. But as the years went by, as I engaged, talked with him more, got to know him more, he really did understand the value of wildlife, and especially, you know, the local wildlife, like in his garden, on the allotment, and he would venture out to Trumpington Meadows as well and wander around there when it was developing. So he was very passionate about all aspects of the environment, whether it be wildlife, you know, equality, you know, that sort of thing. And really a key part of his core, really.
Yes, and that extended to the way he liked to grow things on his allotment, I think, didn't it?
Yes, I think he went for permaculture and mulching, using as much organic matter on his plot as possible and no chemicals.
And the results, I mean, I'm sure we've all seen his allotments. His results were pretty spectacular, weren't they?
Well, it was his passion, and one of the things you can see in the corner is his forest garden. He's got his fruit trees there. It's a little wildlife area as well. And what he produced was incredible. We used to wander down, and, you know, when he was donating to the food hub, I'd do a pick for him or something, and produce bucket loads of food. A lot of it because he was there a lot and, you know, spent a lot of time looking after his patch.
So he had his social conscience as well. I mean, this is sort of an extension of his environmental concerns. He donated regularly to the food hub.
Absolutely. So at the core of his allotment life was not only teaching people how to grow, but to actually make sure that the organic produce got out to people as well. We had open days where he would donate huge amounts of food to the stall. He used to run a garden stall at the market on Sundays.
What, a Cambridge market?
A Cambridge market, yes. And so he was basically wanted it all out there in all sorts of ways, teaching, showing people how to, you know, appreciate good food, basically.
And also, he had a connection with Arjuna, I think.
He did. After he'd finished his degree in Cambridge, he then started working for Arjuna. I don't know if he started work when Arjuna was just a market stall, but they then got a place on Mill Road, which they still have. And his name at Arjuna is famous, basically. My youngest daughter worked there for 2.5 years, and they still remember Dave Fox. And Arjuna is a fantastic place to go and buy organic food, whole foods, all vegetarian and vegan, and mostly loose. You can go and get all your herbs and spices loose.
Yes, but I mean, like Dave itself, it has a strong social conscience.
It does, it does. It's a cooperative, a true cooperative.
Yeah, he does get a mention, several mentions in their book, actually. He obviously made a lot of impact when he joined them. But although Dave was very committed to serious things like the environment, like social conscience work, he also had a great sense of fun as well, and I think Patty showed that sometimes here at the allotments on open days.
Oh, absolutely. The open days were basically run through Dave, his organisation. And one of the things he set up was something called the Human Fruit Machine, which actually sits in the corner of our allotment shed. Well, actually, that's wrong. It has to be the trading hut. Dave would be very upset if I called it anything else. And we still bring out the Human Fruit Machine at CSF days, the Sustainable Food days. And it's basically a painted board where we hang vegetables up through holes, and kids love it, and adults actually, and it's literally a big piece of wood, and it went through several iterations, and of course Dave could name them different ways. At the moment I think it's Human Fruit Machine version 2.0. in very Dave way, it was fun, but it had to have a version name.
And Dave, was he interested in bees? Is that something he...
He was always wanted to have bees on the site, even though he didn't keep them himself, because he recognised their value in pollination. As well as bees, he was also involved in a group of us keeping chickens as a collective for a while, where each family would do one day a week and then look after them one weekend in five. So, and collect the eggs on the days we looked after them, so being still going over 20 years later.
He also was very concerned to grow straight parsnips. I don't know if any of you knew about that. He did a thing for flavour. But he did grow high-quality fruit and veg, didn't he? And I think he was quite competitive about it, was he not?
Yes, yeah. He used to show at the Town and Country Show in Cambridge, and Ali, his wife, has mentioned that she's taken crates and crates of stuff down to the show for him, and that if he didn't win as many, you know, medals as the previous year, he was very upset.
And he used to win a lot as well, I think.
More than 20, I'm told. 20, 25 medals, I think, or certificates.
What, in a single year?
Yes, I think, for the variety of vegetables.
And he would always go and compare his vegetables to those that did win and would pick out the reasons why his should have won rather than theirs.
Very competitive.
Very competitive.
And it took about three people to lift one of his pumpkins
on one
occasion to get it into the back of a vehicle.
That was about 5 years ago. Enormous thing.
That was amazing.
So he did a great deal, but he seemed to me to be formidably well organised. Have you experience of his organisation capacity?
I think if you haven't experienced it, you...
You didn't really know Dave.
No. He had a spreadsheet for his growing across the allotments, so that he knew exactly where and when things should go in
rotation.
In rotation, basically across the allotments in different sheets. He created an allotment map for us, which is on an Excel spreadsheet of the actual allotment site, and that's a Dave thing.
And who runs each site?
Each site, that was the way we actually managed the users on the members on the site. But his organisation, I mean, I don't think I know anyone better with his organisational skills. And his attention to detail was incredible. It wasn't just based on, I mean, some people you think of when they have, you know, organisation skills, they might not do it very well when you talk to them, but actually he was clear and concise about everything as well. He had it in his head and he could pull it out when needed.
And his work for allotments extended beyond Trumpington allotment, didn't it? He was also a powerful force in getting new allotments on some of the new areas that have been built in Trumpington.
Absolutely. We've all seen the developments around Trumpington. And initially, when they were talking about it, I think they had 106 money, I can't remember the details, about allotment sites. And the developers simply wanted community gardens because they thought they looked prettier. They thought allotments were just too scruffy for these lovely new developments. And Dave and I and Philippa Slatter and Kerry and Dave, we all got involved with a push to the council to make sure that allotments were actually given to the to the new sites. The Clay Farm one in particular took a long time to get going, and people were desperate for that. And in a way, COVID made it happen quicker than previously. For many years, they just ignored it. You know, it wasn't their priority.
They wanted to build and sell.
They wanted to build
houses,
and sell. They weren't interested in this spare bit of land. Yeah, but there are, there's Trumpington Meadows allotments, there's Glebe Road, and there's Clay Farm.
And Nine Wells as well.
Yeah.
Interestingly, when Dave was in hospital once, he's obviously had many hospital sessions. I went to visit him, and this was two or three years ago. We actually had a walk round Nine Wells to look at the allotments in Nine Wells. Always there, basically, to see the allotments. And we were both really interested to see what was happening there.
Yeah. And Dave, you set up a site for people who wanted an allotment, didn't he?
Yeah, there was something named something like iwantanallotment.com, and then if more than six people in an area want an allotment, the council has a duty to respond. They don't necessarily end up providing it, but they have a duty to respond, and it would help to generate the letter to the councils.
I don't know if we've covered this sufficiently, really. He was very helpful.
Very helpful, yes.
I mean, to allotment holders, to people who needed or wanted or asked for advice on...
He ran Saturday morning training classes, basically, on his allotment.
For
a long time. And you go to very random places within Cambridge. Like, I went to ARU to sort of an environmental thing, and one of the professors of environmental science remembers having lessons with Dave and said, remember me to him, and he remembered her. So, you know, that's fantastic, really, isn't it?
That's just reminded me. I was just thinking of the large number of people who know Dave Fawkes. And I remember somebody telling me, this is before I knew him, that his mum used to serve teas and coffees to a Longman told us. Oh, what was all that about?
Margaret's tea shop.
When she moved in next door to Dave, we'd go and have meetings in the house or everything, and basically she was on hand to provide as much tea as possible as we could drink.
So, yes.
And did she used to fly a flag or something to show that she was brewing?
Yes, yes. He converted the shed in the bottom to Margaret's tea room, didn't he?
I should say one thing I'd like to add before I finish is he would take anybody to show him his allotment. If you go and visit Foxy, Dave Fox, he would, as part of your visit, you would go and visit the allotment. You know, and he would, when he had parties, he would take people to show his allotment because he was so proud of it, all the effort he put in. And as you go around, he'd offer you food and help yourself to that, and all that sort of stuff. And it was really kind of,
And I think it wasn't to show it off. It was to show what you could achieve, I think. Yeah. I think that's
what... It was a bit of showing off, I think.
And there was but I think... I didn't get the impression it was...
It wasn't blatant, no. He was just really proud of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was his pride.
The local primary school used to bring the year ones and receptions up on a termly basis. And Dave would have some of them on his allotment, show them how to grow things, give them seeds to plant when they got back to school, and I'd do half on the community orchard and we'd swap, and we really miss him for that. There's no one can take his place, basically.
That's his legacy, really. It's going to be, felt across the city. The positive legacy.
Definitely.
It's really amazing. And the sadness is brought about because of the happy memories. I think that's true.
Yes, he was also involved in going to crop share, where we'd work on a Saturday morning at an organic farm in Lode as well. For a while.
Any opportunity to contribute time or advice or support? Well, he supported the Reach Solar Farm, the community solar farm. He supported that as well. Yeah.
Well, there aren't very many people like Dave Fox, and I think he's going to be missed by a huge number of people. What a lot he did in a life that was too short.
Yes, and a good friend of mine, Carolyn Rezhniak, said of Dave, he was a brilliant allotmenteer and so knowledgeable. An early carer for the planet and all matters green.
Yeah, I really loved his allotment features. I never got to meet Dave the once, but one thing I always remember, it's just he had such a great voice and such a great tone. He was so listenable. And that mixed in with, when you recorded with him on the allotments, the sound effects and everything, it was just really kind of reminded me of Percy Thrower.
Details of Dave's funeral can be obtained by emailing davefoxfuneral@gmail.com. Now, I remember one evening a few years ago when I was at Trumpington Allotments hearing, rather unexpectedly, the sound of the Clash booming out across the lettuces. And I eventually realised that the source of the music was Dave's allotment and discovered he was a great fan. So we end the programme with one of his favourite tracks, which also demonstrates his sense of humour. But I'm afraid that if you're listening to our podcast, you'll not hear much of it because of copyright regulations. But this programme will be repeated on Monday at 2 p.m. and it will also be available as a podcast shortly. Before then, it can be heard at any time on the On Demand button on Cambridge Radio's website. But until next time, the 28th of June, from all of us here in the studio, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Should I go? If you say that you are mine, I'll be here till the end of time. So you got to let me know. Should I stay or should I go? It's always tease, tease, tease. You're happy when I'm on my knees. One day it's the next is black. So if you want me off your back, well, come on and let me know. Should I stay or should I go? Should I stay or should I go now? Should I stay or should I go now? If I go, there will be trouble. And if I stay, it will be double. So come on and let me know. This indecision's bugging me.
Indecision, they molest us.
If you don't want me, set me free. Exactly whom I'm supposed to be. Don't you know which clothes even fit me? Come on and let me know. Should I cool it or should I blow? Should I go now? Should I stay or should I go now?